Welcome to the Sunday night newcomer returning member meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be some time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Diane, a compulsive overeater from Toronto, Ontario.
Thank you, Davila. Hi, everybody. So nice to see you here. Welcome to the newcomers. I'm Diane. I am a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. And even though that may sound depressing, it actually isn't, because that admission was the gateway to liberating me from this dreadful food addiction. So I'm 67 years old. I've had problems with food since I was five. That's 6 decades of binging, dieting, obsessing, and battling with my food and my body. I've been in program almost, 2.5 years in the program, and I've had solid abstinence for 2 years and 2 months, but who's counting? Truly, it is a miracle that a hardcore compulsive overeater like me has found, has recovered. Given that I'm Greek, I kind of jokingly refer to my past as my big fat Greek life. I don't think I was born a food addict. I was predisposed, though, toward food addiction, and my family was very food focused. I think that's partly because we're Mediterranean, the culture, but I also think there was a genetic component. I always wondered why so many family members struggled with their weight and why I think many of them were addicted to food just like me. And in addition, my grandfather founded a restaurant chain that specialized in comfort foods and gooey desserts. So food was always very central to our family life. And growing up, I had a very warm, loving mother, but she was extremely temperamental and emotionally immature and needy. And she really couldn't handle her own emotions, let alone mine as a kid. So I'm not blaming my poor mother. She did the best she could, but I really didn't learn healthy ways of dealing with my feelings. And in fact, what I did learn was that my mom's needs had to come first. And I took it upon myself to make her happy. Otherwise, the whole house would be in turmoil, and it was a very sort of scary and kind of unsettling environment. So I was very sensitive to her moods and to pleasing her. And because of that childhood pattern, I think I unconsciously found my purpose and validation in being a caregiver and a problem fixer. I always felt responsible for everyone else's well-being. My mom was affectionate, but she was also a perfectionist, and she was very critical of herself and of me. And I felt I had to earn her love. It wasn't unconditional. She didn't seem interested in really getting to know me and what made me tick. So from a very young age, I turned to food to deal with my uncomfortable emotions and with feeling alone and misunderstood. You know, on the outside, everything looked good. We had a nice house. We were financially secure. I went to good schools. I had a very loving and supportive dad, but he worked long hours. But I first realized I had a weight problem when I was five. I was a ballerina in the Nutcracker suite, and I had little candy canes in my hair. How ironic. And I saw a picture of myself with all the other little ballerinas, and they were all these little skinny sylph-like girls. And there I was, stuck in the middle, looking like a mini sumo wrestler. And when I saw that picture of myself, I felt such intense shame, and I was only five. By 11, I went on my first real diet to a pay and weigh, and I lost weight successfully. And from then on, I started the binge and diet cycle. By the time I was 12, my mom went into hospital for severe depression, and I kept up my grades, but I came home to a big house alone. And what did I do? I ate. My parents had marital problems. There was a lot of chaos in the family, and eating was my only solace. And when it came to eating, I only had an on and off switch. I either dieted and starved, or I binged. There was nothing in between. I did not know what it was to be a normal eater. By the time I was 18, I was somewhere like 185 pounds, and the doctor put me on a 500 calorie diet. I stuck to that diet diligently, and I went down to 90 pounds, and I stayed there for 2.5 years. I was anorexic. I was literally on the crazy train. And after the 2.5 years, I gained all the weight back, and only to lose it again, and then gain it again. So in my 20s, I did have a quick brush with OA, but I really didn't understand the program and I didn't stick with it. And I really, I thought willpower or therapy or the next right diet was going to solve my problem. But of course it didn't. And I wandered in the wilderness for 40 more years. So mine is really a cautionary tale. I'd stuck with OA. I wouldn't have had the miserable history of gaining and losing that same 40 to 50 pounds through my 20s, my 30s, my 40s, my 50s and my 60s. It probably adds up to more than 500 pounds of weight gained and lost. And through the whole that whole time, I felt tremendous shame, self-loathing, and bewilderment. I had tried every conceivable weight loss program. I'd read tons of self-help books. Nothing worked for long. I did go to therapy. I found it very helpful in understanding myself, but it did zero for my weight loss. Even my psychiatrist was still overweight, actually. And I thought it was managing pretty well. I had good jobs. I had close friends. I had boyfriends. I traveled. I had hobbies. But I was so baffled by this disease. I was successful and disciplined in so many other areas, but there was no way out of my suffering in the area of food and eating. And I really didn't recognize the lies I was telling myself, like, oh, I'll start tomorrow. Of course, tomorrow never came. I deserve this food because I give so much to other people. When I had that urge to binge, I felt possessed. It was like a command. I had absolutely no power to resist that command. And in retrospect, I realized I had no boundaries, not only with the food, but with other areas of my life. Balance and moderation were not words in my vocabulary. I was an extremist. If working was good, working to exhaustion was better. If helping people was good, helping people and spending all my time on their problems was the better thing to do. So I was an extremist. But anyway, I managed to marry. I married a little late in life, a wonderful man. But after 8 years of marriage, sadly, he died of cancer. And of course, after he died, I gained a ton of weight. And then 5 years ago, when my mom was dying, I found out that a very close relative whom I admired and trusted implicitly had embezzled all the money from the family business, my grandfather, that restaurant business that my grandfather had built for nothing. So my mom and her siblings and I and my cousins had all our money stolen. And I was in total shock. I thought, how can this be happening to me? I'm a decent person. I've come from a good family. I don't deserve this. So there was a knockdown, drag out legal fight for 3 years. And of course, how did I cope? I binged on food and Netflix. It was the biggest fight of my life. It was ugly. It shattered my family. And after it was all over, I lost all the weight again. And I swore this time I'm going to keep it off. I'm never going to gain it back. But of course I did. And the irony was the more miserable I felt about my weight, the more I ate. And I was eating progressively more and feeling emptier by the minute. You know, when they say it's a permanent and progressive disease, I can attest to the fact that it was and it is. So in 2019, I Googled binge eating disorder. And if you can believe it, until that time, I didn't actually recognize that I had a binge eating problem. I knew I had a problem, but I didn't see it as that. And I rediscovered OA. I had completely forgotten that it existed. I'd had total amnesia about it. So I binged on a Monday and I went into OA meeting on a Tuesday and on Monday night, I should say. And at my first meeting, I encountered a bunch of people who were kind of talking a foreign language. They were talking about food being loud when they aren't spiritually fit. It was a little odd, but they were also describing exactly what I'd been going through. So for the first time in my life, I truly felt understood. This definitely was my tribe. And a strange thing happened. I went home and I had no desire to binge. I kept going to other meetings, still no desire to binge. I didn't really understand the program. I thought all I had to do was go to meetings and do readings. But an OA fellow called me and said, listen, you're not working the steps. So she became my sponsor and she introduced me to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, on which the 12-step program of OA is based. And it was through the big book that I was introduced to a vital concept called the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. The foods I binged on were considered my allergic foods because of my adverse reaction to them. Once I ingested those binge foods, instead of being satisfied like normal people, I could never have enough. So the eating of those allergic foods created an insatiable desire for more, a craving. And I was really relieved to realize that this was the reason for my bottomless appetite. I wasn't just a freak. There was, you know, a physiological reason for this. But what defined me as a compulsive overeater was the second part, the obsession of the mind. Most people who have allergies avoid their allergic foods because they know what's going to happen when they consume them. In my mind, I convinced myself that A, I was going to die if I didn't have my allergic foods, and B, this time it would be different. I'd be able to consume those foods in normal quantities, no matter how many times experience had taught me otherwise. So this is what the big book calls the double whammy, a deadly combination of body and mind, which creates an addiction beyond my human power to overcome. So first I had to identify what were my binge foods and behaviors associated with binging, like eating in the car or hiding food. And I created a daily food plan that excluded those foods and behaviors, and I started working the 12 steps. And during the first 3 months, I had 3 one-day relapses, and I always felt I had a good reason. Life was too difficult. It was too stressful. Of course I had to eat. After my third relapse, my sponsor was going to let me go. And when she told me that, I felt like I'd been kicked in the stomach. I got off the phone and I cried and I told my husband, I said, I don't know where I'm going to go. This is the last stop. I can't go back to my old life. So I was afraid of being fired by my sponsor. And I decided I had no choice but to abstain, even though the thought of never eating my binge foods was terrifying. You know, I like to liken it to being in the middle of a gale storm in the Atlantic Ocean with a very flimsy life preserver, and that's the food. I'm holding on for dear life, and OA to my life preserver, and OA is asking me to let go of the life preserver and swim to shore and to safety. How was I going to do that? Well, the only way to do it was by working the steps and the tools of the program, because clearly what I had been doing for the last 60 years hadn't been working. But it's a big leap of faith. And you bet, without that life preserver, I had a huge incentive to work those steps like my life depended on it. And it did. I learned in OA to focus on one day at a time, one meal at a time. Otherwise, the thought of relinquishing all those foods, which had gotten me through my life until now, was overwhelming. My plan was 3 meals a day with life in between. And focusing on today was actually a very welcome discipline for my runaway mind, because I always was living in the future, planning the future instead of living in the present. I literally went from meal to meal like they were stepping stones. And in between those meals, I'd call fellows in program. I'd work with my sponsor on the steps and reading the big book. I would journal when I was upset. I would attend meetings. I would pray. I would do anything but eat. And slowly but surely, I started string abstinent days together. Days turned into weeks. They turned into months. And here I am at 2 years and 2 months of abstinence. And now I can tell you, I rarely obsess about food. Thank you. You know, becoming abstinent, though, was just the beginning. I now had to deal with the reasons I had been turning to food. And the big question was, how was I going to live life without my binge foods, which had been my safety valve and my unconditional friends? So early on, I realized I wasn't going to waltz into OA, lose the weight, peace out, and live happily ever after. What made this program totally different were 3 pillars: physical recovery, emotional recovery, and spiritual recovery. And without all 3, I would inevitably return to the food. So first, I had to get out of denial. I had to take step 1 and admit I was a compulsive overeater, that I was powerless over food, and that my life truly was unmanageable. And I found that both shameful and kind of irritating to describe my eating as an addiction. But I was truly desperate and defeated, and that worked in my favor. So to get well, I had to concede I'd run out of options. I had no earthly way of doing this myself. And step 2 says, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And at first I really bristled at the notion that my life was insane. But then I thought about it. I was relying on food to get from one moment to the next, to bring me relief as I got fatter, more unhealthy, more antisocial, and more depressed. That same? Was hiding stashes of food in my pockets, my purse, in my drawers, and stuffing my face when no one was looking sane? Was doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result a sign of sanity? No. So I had to admit to step 2. And I had to acquire the humility to realize that I was unable to solve my eating problem with brain power or willpower. When I came to OA, I met people who had the same lifelong eating disorder I did and who had successfully recovered from it. And they weren't dieting, nor were they refraining from eating by white knuckling it. I really wanted what they had. So I decided, okay, I'm going to do what they do because they're living proof that it works. So let's look at emotional recovery. Prior to OA, I confused being highly emotional, which I am, with being in touch with my emotions, which I was not. So every time I felt the slightest disturbance, I'd squelch it by eating. And in fact, I didn't even register it as a disturbance. I just had a spontaneous and overwhelming desire to binge. So in OA, I began to understand that my eating was related to the buildup of everyday human emotions, which I was smothering with food. I had a powerful example of the therapeutic effects of the steps in the first couple of months of joining program. So remember, my sponsor was going to let me go if I relapsed again. And one day I was going out of my mind with a powerful desire to overeat. My sponsor instructed me to call any fellow in program who had solid recovery. I was feeling at that time huge exhaustion and resentment toward my dear aunt who had broken her hip and who I was taking care of day and night. And an OA fellow walked me through something called the 10th step, which is a way of taking an inventory of your thoughts and feelings when you're unsettled. So in the big book, it says, it's a spiritual axiom. Whenever we are disturbed, there's something wrong with us. So no matter what life is dishing out, no matter how unfair it may seem, it's up to me, with the help of this program, to make peace with it, either by seeing my role in the resentment, by changing my attitude, by taking the right action, or if nothing can be done, by accepting it. And miracle of miracles, by the time I finished that 10th step, that overwhelming desire for food had disappeared. It had totally evaporated. And that's what really sold me on OA. My need to be my aunt's savior, without thought for my own well-being, my inability to delegate or ask for help, my desire to micromanage and control everything. Remember, I got my validation from being a rescuer and a caregiver, and I don't do things in moderation. So I realized these were my part in the resentment. And in doing so, I created this festering resentment. And the big book says resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics, or in our case, foodaholics, than anything else. If I didn't acknowledge and resolve that growing resentment, I was going to get relief by going back to the food. Because until I got to OA, actually food was not my problem. Food was my solution. So I ended up getting caregivers from my aunt while I still played a very significant role in her life. And I was able to be a genuinely loving niece without resentment and without going toward the food. And then I got better at detecting other resentments and other uncomfortable feelings whenever I felt off kilter. I had to work through my feelings using the steps, seeking guidance from my sponsor and my higher power, and I'll get to my higher power later, and getting feedback from my OA fellows. The big book cites other troublesome emotions which will send me back to the food, and among them is fear. And this is a quote: "This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It's an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it." Well, in my case, that's absolutely true. Until I stopped eating, I had no idea how fear-driven I was. Fear of the future, fear of financial insecurity, fear of not being approved of, fear of not getting my needs met. You name it, I feared it. And it was exhausting. So one by one, I began to confront all these paralyzing fears that used to send me to the food. I definitely feared step 4, where you list an inventory of your past resentments, fears, and harmful behaviors. And I thought, oh my God, this is going to be like, it reminded me of my mother and her withering criticism. This is going to be a let's dump on Diane session. But instead, it was a gift. I saw patterns of behavior that didn't serve me. One of the big ones was having unspoken demands and expectations of other people, believing that they should think and act according to an unwritten manual I had for them, and I hadn't shared with them either. I soon learned that expectations are really resentments in the making, and I have to address them or the food will be bellowing at me. I discovered other maladjusted patterns of thought and behavior, and I learned to course correct when I headed in the wrong direction. So let me get to the third pillar of the program, spiritual recovery. And that entailed taking step 3. I'm not doing these in order, but forgive me. And it meant relinquishing control of my life to a higher power of my understanding. So good old Albert Einstein said, the mind that creates the problem is not the same mind that can solve the problem. My track record, it showed me I could not solve my problem of compulsive overeating or coping with life in general. So I had to outsource the job. Luckily, I got to choose who the applicant was going to be. Could be God, could be the OA group, could be the North Star, anything but me. And I came into the program as an atheist. My thought was, as a card-carrying adult, that I was solely responsible for my life. So this concept of a higher power required me putting aside my preconceptions. I have come to see my higher power as a kind of guiding light. I call it a well of wisdom, intuition, or truth, which I can draw upon, a deep knowing which transcends my very fearful monkey brain. My higher power always brings me into harmony and balance. So consulting with my higher power before acting or reacting to life is my key to spiritual growth and recovery. It helps me to see not the center of the universe. And how I interpret life is often highly subjective and very flawed. It gives me much needed perspective and a true reality check. And really, what was so difficult about having a higher power? After all, before OA, food had been my higher power. My, people had been my higher power. Even my human intellect had been a kind of higher power. The psychologist Carl Jung tried to help many alcoholics and not successfully. And one of the things he said was that alcoholism was a low-level thirst for spirituality. And I think the same can be said for food. I was looking for peace solely in material things, or in this case, food, instead of in the realm of the spirit. It's taken me time to develop a relationship with my higher power, and it's still, I would say, in its early stages. I tend to recognize after the fact that my higher power has been guiding me all along the way. And I'm going to give you some examples of evidence of my higher power. I am abstinent and peaceful around food for the first time in 6 decades. The most amazing thing is I don't even think about going to food when I have uncomfortable feelings. I still may feel unpleasant, sad, upset, I'm human, but I have a higher power. I have the steps, the tools, and my OA fellows. I didn't weigh myself when I started in OA, and I don't weigh myself now. I decided if I was truly going to surrender to this program, I would do the work and leave the results to my higher power. And I am thinner than I have ever been, except for when I was anorexic. And it happened quite quickly. On a personal note, here's some other examples of higher power. My husband died and I was very sad, and I went to a bereavement group where I met my future husband, who had lost his wife to a brain tumor. His name is Angelo, and I like to call him Angel with an O. Last year, before my mother died, or in the last few years, I should say, before my mother died, our fractured relationship mended. I came to appreciate so many of her qualities when before I had only been deeply resentful of her. And I can honestly say that today I only have loving feelings for her. Most important, my higher power has given me the problems I needed, even the ones with my embezzling relative, because there I learned to grow up and stand on my own 2 feet. I found my voice. I fought for justice, and I got a measure of justice, not only for myself, but for my aunt, so she could live her last years in dignity and security. All my life, I was desperate to be thin so I'd be acceptable to the world, but I couldn't sustain my weight loss because I needed to work on my insides. If I hadn't found OA, I would never have come to terms with my turbulent emotions, nor would I have learned to cope with life just as it is. I would never have understood how essential physical, emotional, and spiritual recovery are to a peaceful life.
5 minutes.
Thank you. There's an expression that I really like, and it is, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. I had to face that I am a compulsive overeater, that I will never be able to eat like other people, that I couldn't relieve this terrible addiction myself, that I needed to access something beyond the limits of my human power. And I had to face the personal shortcomings that were preventing me from living a harmonious and meaningful life. This program has truly given me a beautiful and enduring gift, and that is a design for living for every situation in life. So I would like to say to newcomers or to anyone who's struggling in program, never ever give up. I am the poster child for hard to crack cases, 60 years of compulsive overeating. There really is a solution, and it is here. I am very grateful to all of you for listening. And if I can be of any support to you, please let me know. Pass.
Thank you, Diana, for your wonderful story and for sharing the solution with us tonight. Thank you.